Gaddis, Chapter 3, Section 6, page 71. With the end of the Cold War, though, it has become possible not only to ask this question, but to answer it. The best place to start is with the fact that in Korea, the superpowers had superimposed their rivalry upon a civil war that would have existed in any event. Both Kim and Ri were determined to unify the country in their prospective terms, despite the fact that the 38th parallel, because of the 1948 United Nations-sanctioned elections in the South, now had a degree of international legitimacy going well beyond its original purpose as a military demarcation line. Both sides had been conducting raids across the parallel for some time prior to the outbreak of hostilities. Neither Korean leader could mount a full-scale invasion on his own, though each would need to persuade his superior sponsor to provide the necessary equipment and support. The question boiled down, then, to whether the Soviet Union or the United States would sanction an attempt to reunify Korea by military means. The evidence now confirms that after repeated attempts, Kim got a green light from Stalin in 1950, while all received from Washington were yellow lights shading over into red. What, then, could have been going on in the mind of the normally cautious Soviet leader that led him to authorize an attack on South Korea? Stalin's new optimism about the prospects for international revolution provides a possible explanation. The Soviet push for influence in Western Europe had run up against its limits. What with the success of the Marshall Plan, the failure of the Berlin blockade, the formation of an independent West Germany, and the organization of NATO, Asia looked more promising. The Chinese had shown that nationalism more easily aligned with communism than there in Europe, and as Stalin had none too subtly suggested to Lin Shaoqi the previous summer, there might have been other opportunities beyond Chinese borders. We now know that Stalin saw the situation in Indochina, where Ho Chi Minh was seeking Soviet and Chinese support in his war against the French, as one of them. The question remains, though, why Korea? Stalin certainly had reason to resent the Truman administration's continuing rejection of any Soviet role in the occupation of Japan, and he realized the extent to which the Americans were turning that country into a key military strongpoint. Japan will certainly lift itself up again, he told Mao in January of 1950, especially if the Americans continue their current policy. With a communist government now ruling China, he knew that the Soviet Union would eventually have to give up the ports and the naval facilities it had secured in Manchuria at the end of World War II. The new Sino-Soviet Treaty provided for their transfers by 1952. We now know, though, that Stalin insisted on a secret protocol by the citizens of third countries, and that Mao agreed to this reluctantly and with considerable embarrassment. It would have been characteristic of Stalin to wonder how long Beijing's willingness to protect Soviet interests in Manchuria would continue, and to think about alternative arrangements in Northeast Asia in the event that it did not. Then there was Stalin's opportunism, his tendency to advance in situations where he thought he could do something without provoking too strong a response. The Americans, after all, had made no secret of their relative lack of interest in Korea. Not only had they withdrawn their troops in 1949, but Secretary of State Acheson, in a well-intentioned but carelessly worded speech on January 12, 1950, had publicly excluded both South Korea and Taiwan from the American defensive perimeter in the Western Pacific. Acheson had not meant to write off either territory, but he was trying to explain American strategy at the time, which was, contrary to Mao's impressions, to avoid military conflicts on the Asian mainland and to stay out of the Chinese Civil War. The South Koreans and the Chinese nationalists, Acheson noted, would have to look to the United Nations for their defense, which so far had not proven to be weak reed to lean upon. Stalin and Mao, it appears, failed to grasp this perhaps excessively elegant circumlocution. The Acheson speech, together with the top secret National Security Council strategy review that preceded it, about which Stalin might have learned from such well-informed British spies as Gus Burgess, significantly reshaped Stalin's thinking on the risks of war with the United States in East Asia. Prior to this point, he had advised caution, repeatedly warning the Chinese about the risks of American intervention, and as late as December 16th of 1949, disappointing Mao by defending the 1945 treaty he had signed with Chiang Kai-shek on the grounds that a change in even one point could give America and England the legal grounds to raise questions about modifying also the treaty's provisions concerning the Kuril Islands, South Sakhalin,